What's going on, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Blue Jays, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss. Of course, I want to thank all the listeners who make Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. Again, you can follow my work on Twitter, at Weiss Sports, where I'm found on Sportsnet, ESPN's The Undefeated, the Toronto Stars, as well as play-by-play broadcasting for Saga 960 AM Radio. Again, Locked On Blue Jays is free and available on all platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher.
You are Locked On Blue Jays, your daily Toronto Blue Jays podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Today's episode, safe to say, is one of our busiest, biggest episodes of the Locked On Blue Jays podcast. We have a special guest coming on the pod later on the show, Keith Law, senior writer for The Athletic. But before we get to Keith Law, we have some breaking news to break down. Of course, Jose Barrios coming back to Toronto on a long-term deal. And with me to discuss the Jose Barrios deal is once again MLB analyst Jen Smith. Jen, welcome back. Big, big day.
It's officially the offseason. Here we go.
Yeah. Right?
Here we go. It didn't take long. This was an exciting bit of news to get this morning.
No doubt. I mean, certainly you and I have been, you know, sort of foreshadowing things were going to be happening. But man, I mean, when that news fell that Jose Barrios would be coming back to Toronto on a seven-year deal worth $131 million. I think Blue Jays fans were quite happy to hear that. Jen, just before we dig deep into this deal, just your thoughts on the Blue Jays locking up Barrios.
This is really a great little bit of business on both sides, I think, right? I mean, you know, we keep reiterating the fact that the Blue Jays need starting pitching. Next year, as it stood prior to this, they only had, you know, three guys that were locked into the rotation in Ryu, Barrios, and Manoah, and needing to fill those spots. And then, of course, looking forward, right? You know, Ryu only has 2 years left. Barrios would have only had this year had they not re-signed him. So, you know, looking forward, if you want to remain in contention for any length of time, you've got to shore up these areas, right? Starting pitching, you can't have enough. So, you know, for them to have gotten this deal done, and we talked about this on another pod, whether or not they would be able to, you know, extend him. And we sort of, you know, floated the idea that if they couldn't get this done by the time spring training rolled around, then it probably wasn't going to get done, right? Once the season started. So, you know, they got this little bit done right now. They've shored up the next 7 years in terms of that rotation spot. And it really says a lot on both sides in terms of Barrios. You know, he could have waited and tested the free agent market. If he had another outstanding year, then who knows what he would have gotten on the open market. He might have been able to get a bigger contract, but this speaks volumes in terms of what he thinks of his teammates, the coaching staff, the front office, and the fans here in Toronto, right? He wasn't here for very long, and yet it left enough of an impression, you know, and he must have faith in this organization. So, you know, rather than sort of waiting and seeing how this season went, he took the guaranteed money.
Yeah, those are two really great points. I think the first being that the Blue Jays lock up a guy preventing him from going to free agency, because let's face it. So next year it's around $11 million that would be for arbitration. And then the next 6 years, it's roughly $20 million a year. Right now, test that on the open market after next season. If he has another great season, he might be making more than $20 million, especially with how different pitchers have been going in terms of free agency. And certainly teams during free agency aren't afraid to spend that kind of money. So I think that's a really good piece of business. Like you said, preventing Barrios from going to free agency. Now, the interesting thing too, I mean, like, let's shout out guys like P. Pete Walker, right? I mean, you know, we've talked about Pete Walker on this pod previously, but, you know, for Barrios to come back, I mean, again, Pete Walker once again has an ability to work with these guys. And for Barrios to come in here on a short period of time and not a full fan atmosphere, Jen, it's not like the 40,000 fans that came to Rogers Center in the height of the Blue Jays fandom in 2015 and 2016. He must have liked something about it here. And you know, when you hear someone like Sportsnet Shai Davidi earlier today on the Sportsnet Fan 590 talk about a conversation that he and Jose had towards the end of the season, Shai was saying how Jose was very much looking forward to perhaps having more years in Toronto. So even back in September, there was an inkling like, wow, like, you know, I really want to, you know, stay here long term. So it just speaks to the culture that this team is building. And I know that that word gets thrown around a lot and it sometimes falls on deaf ears with fans. But from the top to bottom, that's what the Blue Jays are building here, a winning culture and a winning type of team. And having Barrios here long term certainly adds and increases their chances of winning in this window.
Well, for a guy who wasn't acquired until the past trade deadline, for him to have spent so little time with the organization, but to have already come to the conclusion that he wants to be in Toronto long term, that's incredible. That speaks volumes about what this team is actually putting together here, right? And it bodes well for, you know, the possibility of signing other free agents this offseason. It bodes well for, you know, getting other players to sign extensions because of that atmosphere, because of what this team is building. And yeah, I really think that both sides did extremely well here. And, you know, the other piece of this too, is you look at what they gave up to acquire Barrios, right? They gave up Austin Martin and Simeon Woods-Richardson, two prospects that were relatively highly regarded, particularly in Martin. And, you know, rather than only getting a season and a half out of Barrios, they're now going to get this long-term deal with him. So, you know, I think this was a really smart move on both sides.
Well, I think what's interesting too is that early in the deal now, there's a lot more open payroll to spend, especially early in the deal. Now, you know, it's a bit backloaded, the deal. Mm-hmm. I know that in 2023, there's not going to be as much wiggle room, just given the contracts that are on the books at the moment. And then, of course, the arbitration of Bo and Vlad and whatnot. 2024, though, it'll definitely open up a little bit, especially if, you know, that means Ryu's probably gone, Grichik's gone, Gurriel probably gone, and whatnot. I think, though, it'll be interesting to see what they do next, because, look, there is a signal, and there is a train of thought here that, look, this is a real signal right now that the Blue Jays are willing to spend. Mm-hmm. The issue is, though, is the term. I don't know, Jen, if they're willing or can be able to, frankly, sign another, you know, guy to a 6-7 year deal, right? Because again, it's going to get very complicated, because we've talked about it in previous episodes. Vlad's going to get more expensive. Bo Bichette's going to get more expensive. Teoscar Hernandez is going to get more expensive. So things are starting to be very interesting from the financial perspective. It'll be interesting, though, because I think the Blue Jays could do one of two things in terms of pitching. You could either maybe sign a guy to a short-term, high AAV deal, like a one or two-year deal, or trading. Trading is always an interesting way to bring people in, like we've talked about in previous episodes, in terms of bolstering that pitching staff. So it'll be interesting because a lot of people are asking on Twitter, like, what does this do in terms of the Marcus Semien or the Robbie Ray deal? Sure, it signals that the Blue Jays are willing to spend, but you got to be a little bit careful on the term because of all the other contracts that may need to be signed coming up down the road.
It's like a really giant puzzle, but they've got it mapped out. I'm sure they've got their walls with their different, you know, pins in it, mapping out this scenario and that scenario and what their current value is of particular players and how much that would cost and, you know, what that then does to the payroll. So, you know, whatever it is that they've mapped out here, I assume that they've accounted for all of those things that you've just mentioned one way or another, whether it means trading certain players off the roster, you know, standing firm at a particular offer and not going above it, even if it means losing somebody that they want to keep, whether it means bringing people in via trade rather than big free agent signings. I really don't know what exactly the plan is. And, you know, like I keep saying, it's not my money. So spend away and figure it out. And I think that whatever it is that they've mapped out for themselves, they knew that they could fit this in while still accomplishing other things that they want to get done.
Well, I think Sports Desk Shy, you made a good point today when talking about this, because, I mean, again, there's the whole conversation of, look, you know, replacing Ray, Semyon, Mats. Not only are you trying to replace those guys in terms of, you know, the wins they could bring, but also the financial efficiency, right? Because, again, all those three guys came on relatively cheap deals. So it's a real, like you say, a real jigsaw puzzle to figure out, well, can we bring guys that, you know, can be cheap, but provide that same kind of value? It really is tough to see. And are you going to be willing to go into the prospect pool again, which the Jays, I think, are willing to do that now. I think that's very clear with that Barrios deal at the deadline. They're willing to do that. And you know what? They're in a contending mode right now. So that's fine to be, you know, throwing out, you know, different names in terms of prospects. I just think it's really fascinating, too, that the Twins didn't, you know, sign, you know, get a deal done with Barrios. I mean, they, you know, their contract talks stalled, which is why this trade even happened in the first place. So I just find it really interesting. I think it again shows where this Toronto Blue Jays team is. And I just think, you know, like you said off the top, bring on the offseason. It's begun. This is going to be the first of, I feel, many moves to come. It'll be interesting to see if some happen these next few weeks before December 1 or after. But the Blue Jays are, you know, this is not going to be the last move that the Blue Jays do. But it's nice to have that certainty of someone that's going to provide durability in the rotation, which Jose Barrios does.
He hasn't missed a start in the past four seasons. So that durability is absolutely there, right? You have some consistency moving forward. And, you know, whether they did this extension now or they let him leave in free agency, they would still be having to fill that rotation spot at some point. So now that question mark at least has been removed. They know what they're getting long-term in that particular spot. They know how much it's going to cost them, and then they can go about their other business, right? And we did see today, you know, for example, that Noah Syndergaard agreed to a one-year deal worth $21 million, and the Jays were reportedly interested in him. Whether or not they made an offer, I don't know. But Syndergaard was a guy who you could have assumed probably was only going to get offered a one-year deal. And so, you know, very obviously the Jays are considering sort of all different scenarios here in order to fill their particular needs.
Last bit of Jays news before we go. Blue Jays manager Charlie Montoyo finished fourth in AL Manager of the Year results. It was Kevin Cash of the Rays who won AL Manager of the Year again, back-to-back years. I don't know, Jen, Charlie Montoyo. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens. But, man, for a guy to get fourth place, given what he was able, you know, what he had to endure in managing, you know, the team through the three different cities, I feel like the voters underestimated him a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's going to probably happen when a team doesn't make the playoffs. You know, I think that's just the way that things go. He definitely had a unique set of circumstances to navigate through with his team that no other manager had to face. And so, you know, from that perspective, like, I can totally understand why he should have been considered for manager of the year. And perhaps some did underestimate him. I don't think it could have been easy keeping that team focused and, you know, loose and so forth with sort of everything that was going on. And you know, you have to remember too, it's not just the different stadiums and the lack of fans, but it's also, you know, the being away from family. You're in this city, now you're in this city, now you're in this city, right? Where are you tomorrow? We don't know. And I think that that was a lot to actually navigate. So, you know, I am glad to see that at least he got some consideration for manager of the year, because it was such a unique year. And, you know, to still put up the 91 wins, particularly a team that, you know, as we said at the trade deadline, some people were talking about them being sellers. And, you know, I'm certain that Montoya, you know, had something to do with the fact that this team managed to keep it together the entire season.
Jose Barrios, he's back with the Blue Jays, 7-year deal worth $131 million. The first, I'm sure, of many more off-season moves that the Blue Jays are involved in, which we will keep you up to date on. But right now, though, we are going to be getting to our conversation, a really fun conversation, which you do not want to miss. It's Keith Law, senior writer of The Athletic, coming up on the Locked On Blue Jays podcast right after these messages. I love Thanksgiving. All the good food and treats and plenty of them. But maybe you want a yummy dessert that isn't so full of calories and sugar. It's the perfect time for Built Bar, the new holiday dessert. Replace the coconut cream pie with coconut Built Bar, or go to raspberry Built Bar instead of that raspberry pie. Lots of good flavors to replace any pie. Low calorie, low carb, low fat, high protein. Built Bar is a terrific option when you're hungry. And if Thanksgiving isn't coming around soon enough, go for a Built Bar or two. Now, how do you get Built Bar, you may ask? Well, go to built.com and use promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. All right, as I said off the top, welcome back to the Locked On Blue Jays podcast. Lucas Weiss, MLB analyst Jen Smith. We are pleased to be joined by a special guest. He is Keith Law, senior writer at The Athletic, one of the leading voices, all things prospects when it comes to Major League Baseball. Keith, welcome to the Locked On Blue Jays podcast. How's it going?
Thanks for having me. It's going pretty well. How about you guys?
Oh, it's we're doing great. We're really lucky to have you on. But before we get started in terms of different prospects and you know, your career a little bit, I mean, obviously breaking news as we're recording this today, Jose Barrios signing a 7-year deal with the Toronto Blue Jays to stay as a member of the Blue Jays rotation. Just your thoughts on that deal, just in terms of that getting done, you know, so soon and so early in the off season.
I like it, but I mean, that's probably, like, if I just stopped right there, that probably gives you a pretty good summary of my feelings on the subject, which is that, hey, I like Jose Barrios. I liked it for him. I love the consistency. He's not an ace. He's not a one. He's not really a two. I mean, he's been a two at times for certain clubs, but I think ideally he's a number three starter on a contending club, but he's really good at that. And he's very consistent, and we should pay for consistency. He's been healthy, and he has been, his performance has not fluctuated very much. So there is definitely something to be said for knowing you're going to get such and such an ERA and within a range, within a certain quantity of innings. That's absolutely worth something. I was a little surprised that they gave him six years of free agency. That definitely took me by surprise, because as an industry, we just don't give a lot of pitchers contracts of that length.
Yeah.
And although they've had him for a couple of months, it's not like they've had him forever and know his routines and his arm. And you know, if this had been the Twins doing this, you'd say, well, they know him inside and out, right? They probably have a better idea of the risk. Blue Jays kind of just got him. Maybe they feel like they know. I don't want to discredit them. I don't want to discount that possibility necessarily, but boy, was I shocked as somebody who just generally, like, I mean, I think starting pitchers, hey, let them get paid, but long-term deals for them can be pretty risky for obvious reasons. I was surprised that they went there, but at the same time, he's really good. So Blue Jays fans should just generally be happy. It's only money. It's not your money, right? So if Rogers is willing to spend it, great. We just solved a pitching problem for at least the next several years.
That's money. My favorite line. It's not my money.
Right. It's someone else's money. Dude, stop worrying about a billionaire's money, right? Do not, you know, when the owner stands a log on any second and this will prevent them from, no, it won't. They have plenty of money. They can literally just turn over the couch in the office and $1 million will fall out. They got plenty of money.
Yeah, no. And it's so true, but you're right. I mean, I feel like, you know, exciting day for Blue Jays fans, but I think it'll be interesting to see what other moves occur this offseason mm-hmm. in terms of what the front office does. Keith, though, I mean, you know, you're obviously, you know, an expert on prospects. You've written on prospects. You do amazing work at The Athletic. I recommend anyone who's interested in prospects to go follow Keith's work. And one of the, you know, the top sort of stories, you know, beyond the offseason right now in terms of the Blue Jays and their farm system is what Gabriel Moreno is doing. Like, you know, I feel like every day on Twitter, Keith, I'm seeing a video, I'm seeing a tweet, I'm seeing just all this conversation around Gabriel Moreno in terms of what he's doing in Arizona Fall League. I'm just curious just what your thoughts have been just from an evaluation standpoint of what you've seen from Moreno. And is there any likelihood that he could maybe step into perhaps an everyday role with the Blue Jays at some point next season?
I think at some point, I would say not at the start of the year. I mean, they could, right? This club has done aggressive things before, so I wouldn't rule it out. But he's got pretty limited experience above A-ball. And for a position player, a particularly player at that position, I would probably err on the side of being a little more conservative. And this is not a service time argument. This is I don't know if that he's 100% ready. I don't see a whole lot of downside in starting him at AAA and telling him, look, you're going to hit your way to the big leagues, right? You go out doing AAA, which you did in AA last year before the broken thumb, you're going to come to the big leagues sooner rather than later. Put that in front of him. And look, if he goes and hits like that, call him up in a couple of weeks. It's not like they have no catching at the big league level, that he's stepping into some complete void. So I'm fine with them taking a slower approach. I had him ranked as the sixth best prospect in all of baseball at midseason. That's not really going to change, I think, what he's done in fall league. The fall league this year, it's always a hitter's league anyway. There's no pitching out there this year. He got there after I left, so I did not actually see him personally in fall league, but inclined to say he did what he was supposed to do. They're supposed to rake. The good hitters should be going out there and raking. I'd be concerned if a hitter went out there and didn't hit at all, because the pitching is probably worse than what he saw in AA this year. But he destroyed AA. He did absolutely everything we would hope that he would have done, and he catches well. And the fact that he's, you know, it seems like he's hitting the ball with some authority, despite the fact that he had the broken thumb, injuries like that, hand, fingers, wrists can often sap your strength for up to a year after the injury. Maybe that's not going to be the case with him. Maybe he's, as long as he's able to grip the bat like he used to, maybe it'll be fine. And to me, it's just, it is just a matter of checking off a few more boxes in terms of not just playing time for the sake of playing time, but just see him continue to perform against gradually better pitching at each stop. Let him get that one stop at AAA, even if it's just a month. If he goes, like I said, the worst case scenario is actually he goes there and mashes and you say, we should have put him on the big league roster anyway.
There's been some discussion about the Jays wanting to take a look at him at third base. Do you see that as a realistic option for Moreno?
I guess they could if they were committed to another catcher, but I'm assuming, is that because they would rather play Kirk or Kirk and Jansen? I'm not going to cast aspersions on those guys, but Moreno's better, right? I don't think you move Moreno off the position unless they think he can't catch, which I have no indication whatsoever that they have questions about his catching ability, nor have I heard that from any other teams or other scouts too. Everyone says this guy's a catcher. So there would have to be, I would entertain that possibility if you gave me reason to believe he shouldn't catch for the long term. The arguments for that would be, one, you don't think he's good at it. Doesn't seem to apply here. Two, you think he's going to get hurt. Well, he got hurt, but it had nothing to do with catching, if I remember correctly. So three, the only other reason would be the bat is so good, we don't want him to catch. The Bryce Harper argument. There was also the Will Myers argument. Now, Will Myers maybe wasn't that great. Certainly wasn't as good a catching prospect as Gabriel Moreno is. But also, Will Myers' career maybe is different if he stays behind the plate. Maybe he's a more valuable major leaguer. Obviously, he's made plenty of money, but would the arc of his career be different if they'd not moved him out from behind the plate so quickly? I would think about that with Moreno too. And I think Moreno's a better prospect than Myers. I'm not comparing the two. I'm saying don't rush to move this guy to another position. And I don't, for a lot of players, I think trying them out at other positions can be fine. It adds flexibility, gives you more ways to work them into the major league lineup. I don't know that that applies with catchers. It makes me feel uncomfortable for a reason I maybe can't exactly articulate. But I feel like you're a catcher. You're just a catcher. And he should break in as strictly a catcher. Let him work just on that. That is enough of a job on its own. Let him work on that and not have to also try to learn to play another position at AAA or in the big leagues. Let him be a catcher and maybe DH occasionally and stop there.
Another Blue Jays prospect that has been, you know, garnering attention in the Arizona Fall League this year is reliever Graham Spraker. And I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. 26-year-old reliever, you know, reportedly hitting 96 on the corners. You know, he was in AA last year, New Hampshire, pitched 42.2 innings with a 2.95 ERA, appeared in one game for AAA Buffalo. Is he the real deal, Keith?
I think he's got a chance to be a reliever. I mean, that's basically, you know, what you've seen from him in fall league and all he did this year. He was a starter before the pandemic when they brought him back this year. They brought him back strictly as a reliever. And I think he's got a chance to be that. I generally don't put relief only prospects when they're relievers now. I generally don't get more specific on those guys because it's sort of who knows, right? Craig Kimbrell walked a man inning in low A, and a year and a half later, he was closing in the big leagues and became Craig Kimbrell almost right away. So I would say I would look at Spraker as somebody who's definitely a big leaguer. He has a future in a big league bullpen somewhere. He does probably need to throw more strikes, but the stuff seems like it's plenty good enough, at least for him to be, you know, right reliever. And we'll just kind of see how it goes beyond that. The fact that he is 26, old for a prospect, but certainly relievers, you know, guys can add pitches or tweak pitches at just about any age, and particularly for a reliever, one pitch gets a little bit better and suddenly goes from sort of here to here. It makes a jump on a pretty small basis. That can mean all the difference that we need for a reliever. The fact that he's just got the basic ingredients to come up and pitch somewhere, even if he's the 12th or 13th man on a staff, should be, I mean, it's great news. He was a senior sign out of a Division II school in the 31st round. And if he spends one day in the big leagues, you won.
We're back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season. More props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. With Keith Law of The Athletic. Keith, we received a Twitter question about Trent Palmer, an interesting pitching prospect. I mean, he caught people's attention when he threw a 7-inning no-hitter for Dunedin at the end of August. When you look at his 2021 stats, 4-2, a 3 ERA, 63 innings pitched, 83 strikeouts. What are your thoughts on Palmer's development this past year?
Well, he's always had a great arm, right? I believe he was Jacksonville University. It was a big fastball. He looked like he'd have at least a starter build. But he's walked, basically six guys every nine innings. I don't have the exact percentage in front of me, but yeah, that's just not going to work. I mean, here it is, 42 walks in 63 innings for High A Dunedin as a 22-year-old. You got to do better than that. And to me, I would look at that and say, he's not a starter prospect right now. He is a prospect. He has the arm strength to be a prospect, but that's a guy who's not going to last in the rotation unless he has a very sudden improvement in just his ability to throw strikes. He can't even start talking about command or start talking about different pitches. And there were questions when he was drafted. Was he really a starter? Was he possibly a reliever? Hey, it doesn't matter. If you're walking this many guys, he can't be a starter. So he's inventory. It's a great, it's a good arm to have in the system. It's somebody they can, you know, you'd love to have guys who can throw that hard and you can try to work with them, but that walk rate is just, unfortunately, it's just unplayable.
Not a prospect anymore, but Kevin Biggio has been sort of hit or miss at this point in the big leagues. He struggled when put at third base at the beginning of the 2021 season, made a lot of errors, you know, wasn't able to find his rhythm at the plate, which in part had to do with the fact that, you know, he was injured for a good part of the season. But when you look at his numbers last year, his walk rate was down. He had career lows in all of his slash line statistics. What do you see as being his future with the Blue Jays? And should he continue to have a roster spot on this team?
I don't think so. I've never been a believer in Biggio. He can't hit major league fastballs. And I think that's really just teams have really started to exploit that. He had a couple of stretches in previous years where he'd get hot in September, say, against the weaker pitching that you would typically see from expanded rosters. But over a longer period, especially now that teams have had a fair amount of data, been able to collect a fair amount of data on him, it's pretty clear there's a couple of ways to get him out. But the biggest thing is just velocity. And that's kind of been an issue for him going, I saw him for the first time in high school. And that's always kind of been an issue for him. I give him credit. He's gotten more out of very limited physical tools than I would have ever believed. A lot of that is because his ability to just recognize balls from strikes is pretty exceptional. That alone doesn't really keep you on a major league roster. You've got to have something else. You have to have exceptional power, really be able to play a position well. He doesn't really have any of that. And I think what's going to happen is he's going to get squeezed out by better players because this Blue Jays farm system is one of the best in baseball. They just keep churning out players and assuming that they continue to do that and don't, say, trade a bunch of them. I think he's just going to end up without a real role on this team because any position he might be able to play, even at a fringe average level, they have somebody better or will soon have somebody better there who needs those at-bats instead.
Do you see Biggio perhaps being traded in, you know, but maybe as part of a package, could he bring back some value?
Sure. Absolutely. I could see a bad team, especially maybe a bad team that's just not putting men on base at all, say, we're willing to take a shot at that left-handed hitter, maybe platoon him a little bit. You might just like the idea of having a more patient hitter, even if you don't really think he's a good big leaguer, like he's not an everyday player, but you like the idea of having one patient hitter in the lineup, both as somebody who can obviously just provide more base runners for you, but also to model a little bit for younger players, to be able to say, hey, watch Biggio's at-bats and learn from them. His ability to recognize a ball from a strike is a big league skill. And if you have younger players, maybe who are trying to improve in that department, there's nothing wrong with having a player like that in the lineup. And the fact that he can sort of fake multiple positions also could be useful for a team in the second division. The thing is, the Blue Jays are really good. This is a contending team, and they're kind of reaching the point where you don't want to mess around with players who aren't really providing clear value, maybe in more than one dimension. And so that's what's going to happen to the Biggios at the back end of the rosters. They're just going to get pushed out because they have better players or because the organization says, nope, we need somebody better. Even if it's just, say, one of our, you only get a few bench spots for your extra position players, you've got to maximize what you're getting out of them.
With Keith Law of The Athletic, Keith, it's really interesting. I mean, you know, people that get into the sports media space, I'm always fascinated by their journeys to get into sports media, and yours is incredibly fascinating. I mean, you've covered the sports since 2006, but you were a special assistant to the general manager for the Toronto Blue Jays. So you have the added experience of actually working in a big league front office. I'm just curious, from that experience, how did it prepare you for your role in the media covering baseball, evaluating prospects and writing on prospects?
It prepared me. I mean, that's how I learned how to evaluate players in person, right? Was the time that I spent with the Blue Jays working with Tony LaCava, who's still there, working with Andrew Tinnis, who's still there, with Tommy Tanis and Mark Tremuda, who are part of the group with the Mets that have, I think they've been one of the best drafting clubs in recent years and a big part of the pipeline of good young players that have gotten to the big leagues, not always with the Mets, but they were drafted by the Mets. At least I think you get partial credit for that somewhere along the line. So, and I learned from those guys, and those guys were really generous with their time. Chris Buckley, who's been with the Reds for a very long time too, another guy who was always willing to talk to me, always willing to answer questions. I will forever be in the debt of guys like the ones I named and others I've probably forgotten to name as well, who were willing to take somebody who came in as just a fan who, you know, I certainly knew my way around the baseball statistics that were available at the time, which pale in comparison to the data that's available to teams today, but that's what I had. But I walked in, I didn't know how to scout at all. I barely knew anything about it. And so I kind of had to start from zero. And those guys were willing to help me get from zero to where I was, at least when I chose to leave the Blue Jays and said, this isn't the life for me. This isn't the career for me. Got the opportunity to go work at ESPN. I had to apply those skills right away. I was out seeing players, minor league players and amateur players that first summer. And I had to take what I'd learned over the previous 4.5 years and apply it. So that's what really carried over from one job to the next. What I was fortunate in that I had some freelance writing experience from before I went to the Blue Jays. I've just also always really liked to write. My mother-in-law just asked me today, because she subscribes to my email newsletter and reads it very faithfully. She's one of my most dedicated readers. And she said, she's Welsh, does writing come easily for you? And I said, yeah, it kind of does. She goes, you're very fortunate. And I said, yeah, I kind of am actually.
That's awesome. I mean, you know, look, it's always great to have supporting family members. And, you know, I feel like anyone who has, you know, a newsletter or whatnot, you know, it's great to have the family on board with that. But it's interesting in your answer, because I think you pointed to two important concepts. I think the importance of, you know, relationship building, right? I mean, you mentioned a lot of the people who were, you know, mentoring you, took a chance on you in terms of bringing you into the front office. And, you know, how that was so formative for your experience. But also, I'm sure the reps, right? And probably there's people right now trying to break into, you know, the baseball industry in whatever way. And I feel like just the more times you have, you know, reps in terms of chatting with people and just being, seeing people in person, right? I mean, you can't beat that in terms of being able to effectively scout and evaluate players. So I'm sure from your experience, I mean, the more reps you had during those early days, I'm sure, you know, has just helped pave the way for when you did enter the media realm in terms of writing and covering prospects.
Yes, but I'll offer a little caveat to that too. It's about the reps. This would apply to any endeavor. It's about the reps, but also the feedback, right? So if somebody says, I want to get into scouting or I want to get into writing, simply going to a lot of games and then writing scouting reports for yourself or that you publish online, I mean, that's not bad. Cannot get better just by doing that, particularly because the time from when you see the player and evaluate him until you find out how your evaluation was is actually pretty long in baseball terms. Whereas having people around me who were experienced and were good at their jobs and had been demonstrated that through their history of identifying players, drafting players, and also had been promoted by different organizations to positions of authority too, meant that I was getting immediate feedback too. And also I could say, I saw this, but I don't know what to call it. Or remember asking Tony LaCava a question once and essentially said, is that like a kill for you? Is that just a reason you would just say no on a prospect? And Tony was very adamant that he almost never does that to a prospect. He's really determined not to make a single variable a reason not to like a prospect. You've got to consider, okay, well, yeah, I don't like, he's got a big hitch in his swing, but okay, look at the entire package as opposed to look for individual elements. Because if you start to break things down with players and start to just look at every individual element, it's like a forest for the trees argument too. And you can end up kind of hating every player. And, you know, I think my job and the job of most scouts, amateur or pro, and people like Eric Longenhagen and Jonathan Mayo, who kind of do what I do on the media side, our job is to like players. We're supposed to be looking for players who are good. And if you find yourself looking at most players and saying, he stinks and he stinks and he's terrible, and what am I doing with my life? You need to, right? You're in the wrong business, right? There's lots of good players out there, and it's your job to like them and find the ones to like.
You've talked about the use of analytics, and Keith, last night, Moneyball was on television. And
oh, God.
I'll admit I get sucked in every time it's on, just, you know, I, for whatever reason. So I can almost guess your answer by your reaction there. I'm wondering if you think right now there is an over-reliance on analytics, or if analytics are being misused in some way, and which statistics you actually believe are the most useful in evaluating a player.
I don't think analytics are being overused. I think that's a pretty popular narrative now from really on the media side. I don't hear it that much from inside organizations. A couple of organizations that have kind of eschewed their scouts. You'll hear a little bit of that. But for example, I know Houston is likely, since their GM change, at some point they're going to staff back up. I believe they're going to increase their scouting presence. So, you know, where they were probably the most, if you were just looking at the percentage, if you could divide their decisions by input, the analytics took up the, you know, went constituted more of their decision-making process than it would for any other club, but they've actually decided to go back more in the other direction. How much will remains to be seen by what do they actually follow through and hire these people. But I think that, look, it's all data. Scouting is data. Analytics is also about data and how you use that data, how you incorporate that data into a decision-making process. There is no industry I can think of where people are as hostile to new data or new ways of using data as they are in sports. And I think a lot of that is just, one is people in fear of their jobs, which I can completely understand. And two is just resistance to things that are new, and new is scary. And I don't like change. What are you talking about? Everything was fine the way it was. Why did you change anything? And unfortunately, that has led to a lot of people just saying analytics. That thing that happened that's bad, that's analytics. And to me, it's like critical race theory. Fortunately, you're in Canada. You're not as absolutely insane as we are down here. But all these parents at school board meetings for kindergarten, stop teaching critical race theory. I want to grab them by the collar. But do you know what critical race theory is? And it's the same here. Do you know what analytics is? They don't. It's a bit of a buzzword for something they don't really understand. And sometimes people say analytics, and what they really mean is just StatCast data. They don't like launch angle. Sometimes people say analytics, and it just means they don't like using statistics at all. They would rather do things more of the traditional way, using scouting and more acting on gut. But sometimes they just use analytics, and they don't even know what they mean.
Right.
I would argue, look, if I were, you know, I'm not a GM. I've never run a department like that. But if you handed me that kind of authority in any industry, I would say, give me the best data we can possibly get. And let's build the best processes we can possibly build, because that'll lead to the best decisions. The goal is to win. If you're trying to build a baseball team, you want to win. You kind of don't care that much how you get there. Maybe don't be evil about it, but the goal is to win. And if having more information helps you build better processes that lead to better outcomes that help you win, then we should like that. We should want to do that.
Fans who are looking at statistics, so whether it be, let's say, for a hitter or for a pitcher, I'm sure it would be different depending on what type of player they're looking at. What stats would be the most useful if you were trying to say to a fan, take a look at these particular stats to evaluate how these players are doing? Which stats would you say are the most useful?
Mm-hmm. I would say, so I went through this kind of in Smart Baseball, which is my first book, which is, God, came out 4 years ago now. But I tried to walk people through, you know, first section is just kind of getting rid of the, you know, disdaining some of the old stats that I don't think tells very much at all. And then kind of walking up through, I wanted to stick to what was publicly accessible, right? The teams now have access to more information than we do. And so it is important to recognize, even in my writing, when I talk about a player acquisition, I don't have all the information that the team does. Now, I try to talk to people either with that team, with one trade, with one of the teams involved, even third parties, saying, what am I missing here? If I think X, well, why might that be wrong? So I'll offer this, but in that spirit of, I don't know everything. And I literally, in many cases, just don't have the information that teams do. But if you're just a relatively new fan and you want to try to get a better sense of how things work, how to look at a player, for hitters, of all the basic stats you can find on-base percentage is the most valuable one. The job, hitter's job is to not make an out.
Right.
Now there's more you can do with that. And I do think, you know, weighted on base average, WRC plus, they tell a better story. They tell a more complete story. They're a little more obscure though. It's harder to explain to people what those stats are, what they represent. On-base percentage tells a simple story and it's really easy to explain what it is. And that is why I think no matter how advanced stats get, I will never stop looking at that or talking about it, because no matter who I'm talking to, I can make them understand, hey, making more outs is bad, right? We can agree on that much. And then we can go from there and continue talking about what the hitter might do better or worse. With pitchers, it's tougher, because if I said to you, if I was thinking about basic stats, well, strikeout rate, isn't that especially now today, right? If you're not striking out a slew of guys, you better be Marcus Stroman putting the ball on the ground constantly, or it's going to be a pretty short and brutish career for you. But strikeouts they really don't tell the whole story. And we were just talking about Trent Palmer strikes out a ton of guys, but then you look, it's like, oh, he walks way too many guys. Well, that's kind of a non-starter, no pun intended in that case. So you know, I like to look at a variety of stats. I do for hitters too, but for pitchers especially, there's no one stat that jumps off and tells the whole story. So whether it's a prospect or a big leaguer though, is he striking guys out? Is he avoiding walks? What's the home run rate like? Well, everybody gives up a lot of home runs right now. So let's take a look a little bit deeper. Is he giving up a lot of home runs because he's really fly ball prone, or is he just really prone to hard contact? Is he a ground ball guy? Well, he's a ground ball guy, but he's giving up a lot of home runs. Well, maybe he's not throwing hard. So if he leaves the ball up a little bit, he gives up hard contact, but usually it's down and he's able to get hitters to just sort of kill worms in front of the plate. You can see I'm spinning outward into a bigger story, but more statistics. So, you know, start with basics. That's true of hitters too. And work your way outward from there. I think that's the better way to build the picture of a player. Of course, I'm going to say this, you marry it with, you go see the player, you know, with the scouting reports, or just go watch the games yourself.
Out of curiosity, have you developed any of your own tools or analytics for evaluating a player?
No, not really, because I don't think I could do it any better. Okay. Right? I think the statistics that we have that are publicly available are pretty well tested and vetted. Not all of them. There are some that are publicly available I don't think are very useful at all. But I would also rather rely on ones that are publicly available because they're publicly available, because they're there for everybody. I know I have friends who've developed stats of their own, and I'm not saying anything negative about them, but I think you limit the audience of who you can talk to when you do that. And I would really rather my work be accessible to as many people as possible. I love when I do public, it's obviously not much since COVID, but when I can go speak publicly at a bookstore signing, or I've been invited to speak to certain groups, I love doing that because, because I love doing it, but also like your audience is going to be diverse. So you've got to think, how do I reach every person in this room? The expert in the front row, the kid in the back row, who's just thinks it's really cool that there's a baseball guy in front talking to him, but doesn't really know that much. I want to keep everybody in the conversation. And so I'd rather stick to stuff that's publicly available and easier for folks to access and to follow up on too. They leave and they go home and they Google it. Oh, okay. Here's more about this. And then maybe I've gotten them rolling. I've got really hooked them on the subject and they'll continue learning even without me.
Keith, we don't have much time, but obviously, you know, we talked off the top about Gabriel Moreno, and you mentioned during this conversation about just the Blue Jays and their farm system and their ability to turn out prospects and to develop a really good farm system. I'm just curious from your perspective and your evaluations, if you have maybe one or two Blue Jays prospects that within a year or two, you know, they're going to be on everybody's radar.
Yeah, I guess Moreno probably already is on everybody's radar. Elvis Martinez was on my top 100 a year ago. If he wasn't on Blue Jays fans' radar, he certainly should be. I think the Blue Jays have drafted pretty well. They've also done an exceptional job with their international scouting too. We're going to hear a lot about Miguel Giraldo. I think Manuel Beltre's got a chance to really pop. I have always found Sam Roberson really interesting because he's Dutch. And I think that would be kind of awesome if he got to the big leagues, and then he blew out and that seemed to hold him back a bit, but we'll see. This upcoming year should maybe be the first full healthy year we've gotten from him. And his command has always been exceptional for his age. And it'd just be a cool story, I think, to get a guy from a non-traditional country. I know the Netherlands have produced some big leaguers, but not a lot. He would certainly stand out if he got to the major league. So, you know, that's just from the international side. And I think they tend to be overlooked a little bit too, because we have draft coverage. I do draft coverage. Draft coverage is a bigger industry than coverage of international signings. And so a lot of those guys don't, they kind of don't hit fans' radar, even serious fans, until they've popped somewhere in full season ball. You're going to hear a couple more of those names a lot more frequently next year, because I think a lot of them are going to play well and they'll be the guys the Blue Jays are going to contend next year. I'm saying it now. Those are the guys other teams are going to ask for in trades too.
Well, those words, the Blue Jays are going to contend, I feel like a lot of fans are feeling that. I mean, you know, we started off the top about talking about Barrios, and I just feel like it's just going to continue on that momentum. And hopefully, you know, by the end of next season, to be, you know, full capacity crowds at Rogers Center and just the return of postseason baseball. Cause I'm sure you remember 2015 and 2016 well, Keith, and it was quite an exciting time in Toronto. and Keith does the bat flip, you know, impersonation there of Jose Bautista. So he knows what I'm talking about quite well.
Those days are coming back, not with Jose Bautista, obviously, but you know, you got some swagger, right? Yeah. These are fun.
They do.
You know, these are fun players. I was actually thinking, just driving home before we started this, like, playoffs would have been a little more fun with the Blue Jays in them, right? Those guys are fun. They play with a lot of youthful energy and excitement, and I hope they keep that. I hope the old white men of baseball don't, you know, scold them, you know, tell them to act like they've been there before. No. Act like this is the first time ever. Go nuts on the field. I want to see Vlad and Bichette and the other. Like, absolutely. Baseball needs guys like that. And I, for one, I'm still a fan. That's what I want to see when I turn on the TV or when I go to the ballpark and watch a game.
Completely agree. Absolutely. It's a sport. It's fun. It's meant to be fun, right?
Go if it's nuts. Not fun, why aren't we just accountants?
You're right on that. Well, on that note, Keith Law, he's a senior writer for The Athletic. Like I said, I mean, truly one of the leading voices in terms of prospects and baseball coverage. And you should definitely follow him on The Athletic. And Keith, you also have a blog as well.
Yes, at middleparty.com/blog. Which is non-baseball stuff, board games and books and movies. I just reviewed Passing, which is amazing movie that's on Netflix here in the US at least. Try to update that as much as I possibly can. Especially now that we're into the winter and I'm not actually going to games, but there'll be a lot of board and movie content there going forward, the end of the year approaching and all the Oscar bait starting to come out and hit theaters.
Awesome. Well, Keith, we really appreciate you taking the time to come on and chat all things baseball and prospects on the Locked On Blue Jays podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been my pleasure.